Tune in to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
TWO Radio at Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
And welcome to Truth Will Out Radio on Radio Stormer Network at thedailystormer.com. Today's date is the 28th of August 2015. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and before I introduce my co-host, I'll just remind everyone that we do have a live stream. I hope you're listening to us live. If you're not, then you can download our podcasts, which you will find at thedailystormer.com. We also have a chat room that you're welcome to join, and you don't have to just talk about the radio all the time. There's plenty of people in there, plenty of other conversations go on in there, so please do make use of our chat room. You can subscribe to the feed, and you can find all that in the sidebar of thedailystormer.com. Now I've got the adverts out of the way, I'll introduce my co-host, Dennis Wise. How are you doing today, Dennis?
Fine, thanks. Very nice yourself.
Yeah, pretty good. The sun is shining for once. It's stopped raining. It just seems constant rain this summer. I don't know what it's been like where you are.
Constant rain all year.
Yeah, we do hear it's grim up north is what they say. But when the sun shines, it's beautiful being in the British countryside. Lots of greenery, and especially where I am, which is, you know, very, very rural. It's
beautiful. Well, the thing is that I kind of live surrounded by hills, and whenever I leave the area, the sun suddenly appears, and whenever I come back home, the rain always starts. So you can imagine the life I lead.
It's nice being in a nice three-dimensional landscape. I suppose all landscape is three-dimensional, but when you see all the hills around you and the greenery, it's much better than just being on a flat level. You know, that's one of the beautiful things about Britain.
Well, I agree, but it's going to be on the flat and level sunshine and surrounded by hills in rain, to be honest.
Well, I suppose if it is raining outside, then it's better for us, really, because it means that you're indoors working on your projects.
Well, that's a good thing, yeah.
And you've been telling me that you're doing some work on Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, on a new version of it. Is that correct?
Well, it's basically people, you know, sometimes do say that 6 hours is a long time. So, and we're just thinking, like, would it be possible at all to edit it down to a mainstream length, you know? Although, in my opinion, it can be works like a series anyway. But so I started making some moves on it this week, and I've got it down to around about four quarter hours at the moment. But it's so difficult. I mean, I want to get it down at least under 3 hours, if possible. But that would mean half the documentary going. And because I did certain things for certain reasons, it's still up in the air whether it's going to work at that length anyway. But for sure, you know, I'm working on it.
Yeah, that sounds like hard work, especially if you've got episodes that you're thinking, well, I could do with cutting this out, but then it's referred to later on in the film.
And well... Well, a job I used to have was to edit videos, and I got quite ruthless at actually doing that. Whereas, you know, a lot of people had ponds about this, that, and the other. I did get ruthless at it because, say, for instance, a promotional video, if you go, say, on YouTube and you watch some kind of a promotional video, they do usually go on too long, you know, some even top 5 minutes. So, which is for a promotional video, is a long time. So I used to be able to do it, you know, really ruthlessly. So I've adapted this technique to the greatest story ever told. But at the moment, as I say, I'm around about just over 4 hours. So that's 2 hours has gone, which is quite a lot when more or less everything I put in there I did for a reason. Apart from the sharks, the reason I put the sharks in was because I spent about a month, 6 weeks researching the Holocaust. So by the end of that time, I got quite frazzled, and I just wanted something just to clear my head, and doing something with the sharks and the sinking of the USS Enterprise cleared my head up for the further stages.
Well, yeah, that was one of the bits that I was thinking. I was trying to think of any bits that I would have thought weren't so vital to the storyline. And that was one of the bits that I thought of, was the bit with the sharks. And so it's interesting to hear you just wanted to take a break from the Hollyhoax narrative.
Well, that's 2 minutes that you've knocked off the 6.5 hours. So you see the problem. Well, there are parts in it which I can obviously I can lose. Check for instance when the German soldiers were taken to the Gulag. If you can remember, at one point they're marching through Moscow, all these prisoners, and then they're loaded onto a train and the door slams shut. That is usually what you ever see of any other German soldier again. But because of the footage out from the movie, from the German movie, which was as fast as my feet can take me, it actually showed the adventure after the mounting the train, which is why I used it, because very, very rare footage. And it were good to see them, how mistreated they were, because they got piled out to these cattle carts, you know, and dogs were attacking them, and had a 2 minute break to have a bite of snow for thirst, and then back on the trains again, taken to a gulag. Well, eventually marched to a gulag for how many days, who knows, till eventually they got there to live a life of absolute misery under the watchful eye of a posthumous Stalin. And you compare that to what the Jews had to do. I mean, if you believe the Holocaust really did happen, then, you know, fair enough. But if by some chance you believe it didn't happen, then you're actually taken to the door with these trains, because the Germans were so organised. It weren't like they had to march on a death march in the middle of Siberia. I'm not, you know, making any play here. I'm just saying that this is what the Germans had to go through, and it's never really been shown. So that was the reason I included that piece. Another piece I could probably lose out was the bit about the rescue about Mussolini, which I felt needed to be put in at the time, because it showed, one, the ability of the SS, because when I was growing up, all I saw of German soldiers in comics and on movies were complete lunatics, idiots, fun figures. But it showed the bravery of the SS and you know, how they managed to find that secret hideaway, land on the side of a mountain, which was bad enough, and then they had to face the guards, and they got through the guards without any shots being fired, picked up Mussolini, and then probably biggest thing was to get off the mountain, because the runway was like 100 yards, and yet the pilots had the skill to get it off, take the risk in the first place, because you were probably looking into a ravine, managed to get off the mountainside and fly Mussolini back to safety, switch planes, and then to meet Hitler. And then it showed the Scorzone got the praise from the waiting Third Reich leadership, which was all fascinating stuff. But again, you know, I'd probably have to lose that. And, you know, will people who watch the movie after 3 hours, you know, look at the SS the same way they should be looking at them? That's my problem.
Well, that was actually one of the bits that really stuck with me was the rescue of Mussolini. I mean, that's quite an exciting part of the film, and you really feel like you're actually there while he's being rescued. And I think there's a picture of him with this grin, and it just sort of, I'm not sure if this is the actual picture, was him getting out of the plane on that actual rescue mission, or whether it was another picture of him getting out of a plane. But it all seemed to fit in very well, and I can remember it. You know, that's one of the main parts that I remember from it, an exciting bit. I wouldn't have suggested that as a being a part to remove.
So now we're back up to 5 hours now.
But the,
so it's going to be ruthless, you see, but will it affect it in the long run? Things probably have to finish it to find out.
Well, one of the bits that I would have thought could probably be cut down a bit is the escape, where he's escaping from the gulag. I mean, it's when he gets back, when you've got the film showing you the prisoners of war once they have escaped and they meet up with their families again, that is really, really moving. Really moving. It's a tearful moment to actually see that, the emotion involved.
You should have been trying to make it at the time. It really was tearful, yeah.
But the actual bit where he was escaping, I found that, I think that goes on for 5 or 6 minutes. I found that to, I was thinking at the time.
Are you criticizing my work, Sven?
This is the only bit that I would criticize. It's not really a criticism. It's not really a criticism, but it's just a bit that I thought it could be a little bit more pacing.
Well, like I said, but what I was trying to do, we're showing what's never been shown before, you know, in a documentary that I've ever watched, and that's the suffering of the Germans after that train door slammed.
Well, I should imagine that everybody has different bits that they remember as being really important and bits that they didn't think were quite so important. I should imagine it would be probably relevant to where they're from as well, which bits are most relevant to them.
Like you said, there are poignant moments, and because, like, you were brought up in the UK, they were probably the same moments as what I had, because there's certain things we're taught or we learnt at school which, we're never really fully explained. And I'll give you a quick example about this. When you're only told half a story, right? Except, for instance, when Hitler got rid of the unions, right? So when you're at school or wherever, and they say, like, Hitler was awful because he got rid of the trade unions, which to most people, when you're not told the full story, means, well, we've got no power now. You know, we've got no union stand up for us. We can't go on strike. And the workers have a real rough deal. But that wasn't the case. If you're told the full story, what Adolf Hitler actually says is, by having unions and causing all this strife and strikes and whatever, it doesn't actually get us anywhere. And when you get your pay rise, if you do get one, then, you've lost all that amount of work anyway from going on strike. So what he's basically saying is, we don't need the unions, because what should be happening and what will happen is that the workers will respect the bosses and the bosses will respect the workers. And if the workers are treated right and taken abroad, and they've come back refreshed, and they know that if they work hard for this boss, they will reap the benefits, they will work hard. Now, in the boss's case, like, he's looking at his workforce, and he thinks, well, if I can look after this workforce and keep them happy, they're going to make me, quite a lot of money, and with no need for strikes, with no need for any other kind of disputes. Voila, what happened within 5 years, it's history. The greatest power in Europe from a bankrupt start.
And of course, it was the communists that were encouraging all these strikes, whispering in the workers' ears, that your boss is making so much more money out of you. He's trying to rip you off. He's got no solidarity with the workers. You need to start sabotaging the machines and refusing to work. And then at the same time, they're whispering in the boss's ear that all these people are really lazy. You're paying them far too much money. You want to start paying them less money. So the communists were working at both ends of the scale, weren't they, just to disrupt the country so that they could take it over.
But if you were taught this at school, you'd suddenly start looking at Adolf Hitler in a different light. But this is what I'm trying to say, we've only ever been told half a story, if half. So to get back to what I was saying about the certain poignant parts in the DVD, which I'm sure you'd be aware of being brought up in the UK, is Goebbels and Goebbels' wife. And she's portrayed in all the movies as this vicious, evil cow, if you like, evil to the extreme, who murdered all her children, and then happily went off and committed suicide with her husband. We never really got the full story there, but I think the documentary, or the way I portrayed it, kind of shows what an unbelievable strength of character and mother, strength of that mother was just words can't describe. Because for most people, for most mothers, to have to kill one child because they're frightened of, if them Soviet dogs got hold of that daughter and would have ripped her apart, raped her, nailed her to a garage door or a kitchen table, whatever, and then 20 Bolsheviks would have had the way with her. So for any mother to kill one of the children is bad enough, but that incredible woman has to kill 6 of her children to save them from what would have been a horrendous experience, to say the least. And so by the time that part finishes, in part 18, I think it is, you certainly have a different outlook on what a wonderful, brave woman that really was. And that's obviously Magda, Joseph Goebbels' wife.
Yeah, I think you drew a contrast with that to Masada, didn't you? Where the Jews all killed themselves.
Killed themselves and the families. And I looked on today in Israel's Heroes as the Romans were about to break through the mountain hideaway. And yet the Goebbels, as I've mentioned earlier, are cast as evil villains from Hollywood, which is no surprise. But in all the texts and everything else that you documentaries, you know, there's no give there. She was evil, Goebbels was evil, the Nazi regime was evil, end of story.
Well, they've done that to so many of them, haven't they? I mean, you've got Dr. Joseph Mengele, and he must have been helped so many of those Jews to actually live. I mean, he was a doctor there. He was doing blood tests. Yeah. That was all he was doing, was blood tests.
I never saw any hospitals in the gulags.
Yeah, well, they just worked them to death there. I mean, I think you changed. You know, it's changed a lot of people's views about a lot of these characters. And,
well, it's just telling the other half of the story, Sven. This is the thing, you know. There's two sides. As they say, there's two sides to every story. And the Goebbels thing was just, I was so pleased how it worked out, because I had it in my mind how to compare it, obviously, to the Masada incident. But to have a woman going around killing her own children and yet make her look good, if you like, it's a task for anybody, to be honest. But you know, I'm quite pleased how it came out, and the music fit perfectly. But basically, I mean, I could have finished the documentary there at Hitler's death, because that obviously Goebbels committed suicide after Hitler's death, so I could have finished it there. But I felt on, you know, I needed to say that about Goebbels, and then I showed the what went on in Berlin and in the Balkans after that, which then led me down to later on with the footfall of Berlin Wall. It all tied in, you see, so all that's probably got to go, because again, you know, I've got to cut half the documentary.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's very hard to think where you're actually going to come to an end with it, because so much of this stuff has been found out afterwards, I mean, after the Nuremberg trials, and then you've got Fred Leuchter doing his reports, you know, proving that there are no gas chambers, no traces of cyanide in the walls.
Yeah, I'll probably have to lose most of that. I mean, the one bit I did like was, this shamblings of a portrayal that usually the Hitler has was the same with the Nuremberg trials. But I found a little piece, you probably will remember this bit, where I've got an American guy speaking and saying that you knew when Goering walked in the room, this was a man of importance, because he was one which was always like taken a mickey out of and made fun of. But I've got this guy now actually saying that, you know, this guy did dominate Nuremberg, even though, you know, it was a no-win situation where, you know, it was, you know, these prosecutors were all over the place with him because he spoke so well, so eloquently and so intelligently. And plus, he believed he was innocent anyway. So I couldn't, you know, I put that in for a reason, because normally you just see Goering overweight, walking around, you know, in a flamboyant suit, or dead on a slab, taking cyanide, or after he took cyanide. And that wasn't the image in reality, and I wanted to show that in the documentary, and that was one way of showing it. I may have to lose that.
Yeah, some people, they just do have a presence about them. And this is a different type of presence, but I noticed Bishop Williamson, he seems to have a presence, a sense of authority, sure, a sense of a divine authority about him, you know, the Catholic priest, you know, when he speaks, you know, you want to listen. He's got a certain, just a certain presence. I couldn't really describe it, but, you know, some people just do have this. And I can imagine that Goering definitely had an authoritarian presence just with his position that he held. A highly respected man, and, you know, you don't just get respect without earning it.
I have been around people of power at some time, and it's amazing to see the reaction of ordinary people around them, because they have this. It doesn't matter; they don't have to be 6'4" and built like Hulk Hogan. They can be any shape or size. But when they walk into a room, there's this aura about them, which I believe is God-given, and commands instant respect. And men tend to fear it, but women tend to embrace it. You know, it's something of a nature, like I say, some kind of a God-given thing. So if I'm around certain people like that, or I have been around certain people like that, what would it have been like when Hitler walked into a room? Because this is what Hitler had, and Hitler knew he had. He always said he came from Providence. And this is a guy who people went over the wall and died for without even thinking, because they believed in him. They believed he was telling the truth. He showed them what was happening. And he showed the whole world, in fact, without Hitler actually exposing the Jews. A lot of us are still be wondering today who's actually doing this and running the whole thing. So to have this immense aura of power, which without a doubt he had, would have been unbelievable to actually witness, I feel, especially in his younger days, because, you know, the younger, you know, more this power is given off. And they do say that, you know, women did used to flock to him. And there's an instance in one of my videos where I show him walking up some steps. I think I did a birthday tribute to him last time. And he's walking up these steps of his home. There's a guy stood at the top. And as Hitler's approaching the top of the steps, this guy starts to back off. There's no reason for him to back off because Hitler's kind of looking behind him anyway. But that is his presence. He's feeling his presence coming up them steps. And he's automatically taking steps backwards. And that's one of the, you know, few instances on film that I've got of that actually happening.
Well, I think you captured his energy really well. I mean, it is a type of energy that he had. You can see it when he's shaking hands with people. You can see it mm-hmm. the expressions on his face and his movements. He definitely had a special type of energy about him. And as you say, that came from an early age. I'm trying to think back what it was that I read. It was some quote of a friend of his when he was around about 12 years old or something. Something special happened to him. And this just reminds me of some of the best parts of the documentary, I think, were the early ones where showing the early life with the film of that. I think you've definitely got to keep hold of that in there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There are certain bits that cannot be moved, and that is certainly one of them. I think you're talking about the film where it shows him walking around the art colleges and he was sat in the... getting dismissed at the university, wherever it was, in Austria. Is that the bit you mean?
Well, all of those bits, but I'm just thinking of something I read that was saying that he knew that he was marked out for something special from an early age, and he had this early energy thing and knew that it was from God, and maybe that inspired him when he wanted to be a priest when he was young. That was the first thing that he wanted to be, and he obviously changed his views.
You know, touching on a subject which, I mean, I've had some asshole on YouTube from these gooks, as I call them, all week, saying that, you know, Hitler wasn't really a Christian. He had to lie to the population because he knew that if they found out that he wasn't a Christian and he was into the occult, he wouldn't get into power. So I said in a reply, because I do like to reply on YouTube, because apart from, you know, the odd radio show on this one, which I've got, you know, every week now, which is great. You know, I haven't got the platform that, say, David Irving has or others have, simply because, you know, I like to lie low. But anyway, the point being is that I'll answer these questions and or problems on YouTube. And I'm saying to them, you actually, even though, you know, they're saying, you know, Hitler was right and all this kind of thing, and they have this war with him being, as it being a Christian war or him being a Christian. And so I'll say to them, but you're saying that the greatest leader of all time actually lied to his nation, not only up to being put into power, but through the years before the war, and then all the years through the war. You know, it just doesn't register. It just, you know, but they seem to be adamant in this way of thinking that because a couple of idiots wrote a couple of books, and then the whole Western world jumped on it after 1945, they have this amazing thing, wall that they can't get over mentally, that it was actually a Christian war against the communists, and Hitler was a Christian, and although I don't really believe he was a Catholic, as such thing as a Catholic, before, like a Protestant, to be honest, but he was still Christian. And the nations of Europe were all Christian leadership, and they all went over the wall into the Soviet Union, not for a drink and a party, but to wipe out these communists who were willing to take Europe 17 days before. But, you know, fun and games with these people. Sometimes I just got to shoot them up because I'll be there all day. But do you understand what I'm saying, Sven? This war,
oh, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
Does my enemy. The whole root of that one.
Even back in the 9th century, they were saying that Christianity is not in word but in deed, and what they were saying, sure, it's not what name that they were calling themselves by. It was the deeds that they did. That's what made them a Christian.
Judge a man by his friends and his deeds. And as I explained to one guy, after he saved Spain from the communists there and the numerous nuns and priests what would have been massacred had they won. He saved Spain by helping Franco. Then he rescued most of Western Europe by going into the Soviet Union, although he got beat. You know, he saved half of Europe at least. Then he wiped out the Freemasonries, and then he wiped out the occult societies. To be honest, if you put his actions on papers, then this is probably one of the greatest Christians that ever lived.
Well, I certainly believe that. I certainly believe that.
With action, certainly, to it.
You know, he put his faith into action through the state by abolishing usury. I mean, that's the first time that had been done since the first millennium, really. I mean, it's the 11th, 12th century that the Pope started relaxing their ideas on that. And it was the 11th century when the Jews came to Britain and started practicing usury. And they gradually laxed their laws on it, allowing a certain percentage of usury, and it remained like that until Hitler took power and abolished it. Well, made that the centre of the National Socialist policy. It was abolition of usury, exactly, and everything that then follows on from that. You know, you apply that to everything in the rest of life.
Well, what usury does, it drives the wealth into the few and puts, you know, the majority into debt. But if you look at the Nuremberg laws, for instance, they're almost identical to the Catholic laws of the 1500s when the papacy then was protecting Christianity from the Jews. And he actually comes out with one of the laws is they must wear something yellow like a hat or have something stitched onto them to show that they are Jewish. Hello, does that ring a bell?
Well,
and that's just one sample.
It was the Catholic Christian Church that first made the Jews wear that. They used to have to wear a white rectangle in Britain, and they used to have to wear these pointy hats, which I think I may have said it before, but this is where we get the idea of the witch with the pointy hat from. They were Jews. Mm. Jews had to wear pointy hats. And that's why they make such a fuss about the so-called Holocaust of witches in Europe, where all the apparently millions of poor women that were just healers were murdered by the evil Catholic Church. It's a load of nonsense. It was Jews that were practicing Jewry and practicing the Kabbalah and black magic.
Yeah, convert or disperse, and a lot converted, didn't they?
Yeah, and that's where the pointy hats come from. You can look it up on Google with Jews and pointy hats.
I think the Talmud had been going for about 600 years and nobody knew about it, and they discovered it then. And when the church actually saw what was written, that's when they kicked off and said, this can't be allowed. So, no, it's quite true. And although with the Nuremberg laws, compared to these Catholic laws in the 1500s, they were coming more from a religious angle, where the National Socialists were coming more from a race angle. But, you know, different vehicles, same route, same road.
Well, it was the same thing. I think originally Christians, of course, Christians weren't allowed to marry Jews. So the race was kept pure, because the only foreign race that was in the nation was the Jews. And the law was, in Germany, I imagine it was the same law everywhere else, but they couldn't marry Jews. And that's brought up in one of the films that the National Socialists made. as well. It's talking about Swabia and how the intermarriage between Jew and Christian was always banned. So you had the kernel of racial laws anyway in the church.
That's right. Well, if you remember the documentary, the whole 6 hours of the documentary, I very rarely mentioned Christianity. Not for any other reason, because it isn't. People have to understand, I know they probably won't believe me, but just because I'm a Christian, because I keep mentioning Christianity, it's not because I'm a Christian. It's because it was a fact and it's true. And these people who attack me on YouTube with all their reasons and excuses don't know any different. If Hitler turned out to be a communist spy, I would have put it in the documentary, trust me. But I could only put in what I put in. And up to a certain point, there was enough in there for people to take in without going down that particular route, without just mentioning the odd time. Finally, at the end, when Franco, after Hitler died, and I don't know if you remember the credits going up, and it mentions Stalin, and then it mentions Churchill, and then it mentions Truman, and then it goes into Hitler, and the music was just absolutely perfect for that scene. And it shows what Franco said about Hitler after he died, and obviously he mentioned that he fought for Christianity. And some people pull me up on that on the website. Sometimes I get some emails and says, "Oh, I love the documentary right up to that bit when you mentioned Christianity." But I can't rewrite what Franco said. Franco said it. So live with it.
Well, it wasn't just Franco. I mean, as we were talking about the other week with Benjamin Friedman, said that it was a war to side Christianity and communism, and the Germany decided that they didn't want Europe to be communist. They wanted it to remain Christian, and that's what it was all about. That's why they opened the churches up again in Russia when they went into the Ukraine. They opened churches while the communists destroyed them. And the communists put up synagogues while the Germans and the National Socialists tried to get the Jews out of the country. That's what they were trying to do, basically, is remove these communist Jews. Because communism was thoroughly Jewish.
You know, they weren't the first to think that, the Germans. They'd been already removed from, hundreds of countries previous to that. And as I've always said, it can't always be the landlord what's at fault.
No, it's, I think, 109 countries that they've been expelled from. I'll just remind people that if they do want to call in and join this conversation, if you've got anything that you'd like to say about the documentary, your favourite bits, or any bits that you think could be shortened, then just call in radio.stormer on Skype. That's the Skype address that we use for this, for our live programs. So if anyone does want to call in, then you're welcome to. If you have something you'd like to say to Dennis, thank him for all his hard work, or add to this discussion that we're having, then you are welcome to.
Even an atheist.
even atheist.
Even a jerk.
I do, it is irritating when you see people really saying that because they use the alphabet, these runes, our old alphabet, then they were pagan. I mean, that's just our old alphabet. And you've also got an interest in your heritage. Our heritage is...
mistranslations, you see.
We were pagans in our old years back. So that's just part of our history. Okay, we've got a caller here. I'll just answer it. It looks like Brett Light. Pagans in our old... hello, Brett. You need to switch the radio off. So when it goes silent at his end, I'll know that he's switched the radio off. Has he switched the radio off? I've got you muted at the moment, Brett. So as soon as I see it's gone silent there, I'll unmute it.
Hang on.
The short half of us.
No, he's still got it. Still going. We need to get this worked out. When people call in, what they need to do is when the Skype answers, then they need to switch the radio off and wait until we address them. I think that's probably the best protocol that we have with this if people want to call in. I think he's still looking to try and find how to switch the radio off. because I can still see the noise. Yeah, it's well, this is all new to us, doing the actual live programs and having callers. Hopefully people will be able to hear him this time because they weren't able to last time. I'll just try unmuting him again and see whether he's got that switched off now. Hopefully people... No, he's still got the radio playing. Yeah, well, eventually I think those flashing lights are going to go down and we might be able to talk to him. Brett, if you can hear me, you need to switch your radio off. Yeah, well, what were you talking about there, Dennis, just then?
Well, we were just talking about I'm on YouTube at times and I get a lot of these anti-Christian Germans who are pro-Hitler but are the pagan atheist or claim that Hitler was lied to his people for over 30, 40 years, which is ridiculous.
Well, I think people get this from things like table talks. And they think that...
Yeah, well, that is one of the sources that they use, which is not what it is, if you like.
Well, you have to think that was produced after Hitler's death. And usually, if you're looking at extra information on something... if it's been produced after somebody's death, then you look at it, and if it corroborates what you knew they said when they were alive, then it adds to it, then you can use it. But if it directly contradicts it, then you have to go with what was said while they were alive. It's like, it's like apocryphal works from the Bible. If you look at the Apocrypha, if it corroborates what's in the Bible, you can use it. If it contradicts it, then you don't, because the Bible is the official work, as it were. So, and the official words of Hitler are what you have to go by. And if you've got something produced after his death which contradicts those official words, then it's not very useful. It can't be used. No. Those parts of it can't be anyway.
The altered, things as well. I mean, can't remember the title now, but the German gives a lecture on YouTube, and he explains that in the education books, there's a speech of Hitler's that has been altered to make him look like the warmonger, when the fact was, for the last week in the negotiations with Poland, it was Poland who wouldn't talk to him, and he was negotiating through a third party, the British, who wanted war anyway. But they changed this kind of... this speech, which all these kids learn at school, and it makes Hitler look like the real warmonger. And that's just one sample. People were scared to death of speaking up once the war was lost. If somebody had turned around and said, no, that's wrong, Hitler never did this, never did that, they'd be thrown straight into prison or sent to the Soviet Union in a gulag somewhere, if they were lucky.
Now, well, this is just it. Well, that's what you're, that's what you're counteracting with your documentary. Let's just see whether Brett has managed to get the radio switched off yet. Okay. This is just it. No, he's still got the radio playing. I don't know if you can hear me, Brett, but you need to switch the radio off. I don't know what's going on there. It is bizarre. Can you switch your radio off, Brett? Because then we can talk to you. Until you do that, we can't talk to you, I'm afraid. Hopefully you're gonna get this down to a film-like length, which I think is a good thing to do. I really do. I think it's so that you've got two versions of it. You've got the long version with the 15-minute episodes, and 15 minutes is good because that gets people involved, and it's really pacey and it keeps your attention. And then, but sitting down to watch all of them, some people do get put off by that. They think, it's 6 hours worth there. I haven't got the time to watch all that. But if you can cut it down,
I can see that point of view. I know I do know of people who have watched it all the way through. They just wanted more and more as it went along. Some watched it over two nights, and others, taking it parts, in small parts. The problem with this one is if I edit this one down, I won't only be editing the parts of the 15 minutes, because they're usually in little 3 or 4 sections. I'll be cutting down certain things, what are kind of like, say, for instance, when Hitler is going is in the First World War. There's a section there I could lose about 3 or 4 minutes. It isn't like the whole section, I lose the whole section, but I can cut certain sections down by a couple of minutes. But that then throws everything out as a 15-minute set of sections. I just have to cut it at 15 minutes, wherever it falls. That would be the only difference, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way that it's got to be done, I suppose. Mm. And I'm still getting messages here from Brett. He's saying he doesn't have the radio on, but hear that he does have the radio on.
It's very small, Brett.
We're going to have to work on this because it's confusing me doing this. I think I'm going to just switch that off for the minute and cut him off there. And you've also been working on part 10 of Communism by the Backdoor as well, haven't you?
I was hoping that would be finished by this week, but as usual, not the case. There were certain bits I tend to work on these parts right up to the very last minute. When I think I've finished, I'll come across something and I'll think, can I fit that in or does this fit? And sometimes I'll take a complete section out just to get the new bit in because it's more important. And that usually does happen. Somebody asked me last week when we'll be ready. I said, hopefully within a week, which would have been like today. But it looks like, you know, it's going to be sometime next week, whether it's early, you know, or late, I couldn't tell you. But yeah, there's certain things that I mentioned last week that the elites have had a split with Israel over this Iran thing. This is why we see Obama and Netanyahu falling out publicly, where the elites want to make a deal with Iran and turn all the attention on Vladimir Putin and Russia, whereas Israel are now fuming because they always intended to get America, because they normally get other people to vote for them, get America to attack Iran, which Bush was trying to do just before he was got out, but, you know, run out of time. So I was going down this route, and then I came across a speech of Putin's in 2014 in Sochi, where he ended all the game playing in a speech which wasn't covered by much of the Western media, and he mentioned that the New World Order is now over. And the intended New World Order is now over. He blamed America for it. And he also said that Russia don't want war, but will prepare for war because they feel it's inevitable that there will be a war. And very similar to what Hitler once said. So that being said, I put that into part 10, and then hello, August 2015, the Telegraph here in the UK, headlines announces Russia and NATO are preparing for war. So, take of that what you will.
Well, I think what happened was they had a treaty, didn't they? When the Soviet Union fell apart, there was a treaty that they wouldn't increase any more missile bases. They would leave things as they were. But since then, NATO has increased its military bases and put military bases right up close to Russia, and they keep increasing this. So it's only natural that Russia are going to then have to increase their arms to correspond to it.
Thing.
Well, yeah.
What's very similar to World War II is remember when Germany and the Soviet Union invaded Poland. But the West only attacked Germany.
Yeah.
People tend to forget that the veto of the United Nations was Russia and China. But it's Putin who's been getting all the flak, and China not even mentioned.
Well, that's interesting. That is interesting that they never mention China. It's always Russia. Mm. But that's because they're constantly demonising Putin. Because he's standing up and providing an alternative. I mean, what he's spoken about is a multipolar world, isn't it? Rather than a one world, new world order, he wants to see a multipolar world, so that you've got different ways of thinking rather than one way of thinking for everyone, which is the new world order coming down from above. If you've got a multipolar world, you've got different ways of thinking in different parts of the world with different laws and that. Govern their own peoples rather than everybody must obey us, which is what the UN has turned into and NATO forcing things like homosexuality on the world. Obama's talking about forcing that on Africa. Putin said, "Well, no, we don't want that in our country.
We don't need that.
Yeah. We don't need that. We want to keep our traditions."
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting, Sven. You coming from the UK as well, we'll know the implications of this one. The UK have now opened up the Iranian embassy.
Yeah, I saw
you
that.
Know the Iranians have been demonised over the years, ever since the SAS stormed the Iranian embassy. The Iranians have never been portrayed in any good light whatsoever. But now the elites are trying to, you know, get this deal with Iran, even the UK, which means to me the Rothschilds are involved. You know, they've opened the doors for the Iranian embassy. They're looking at Iran at this particular time as not a problem. They never forget, as the Tsar found out in Russia after helping Lincoln in the Civil War, and the Rothschilds were fuming. They never forgot that, and lo and behold, you know, years down the line, you know, the Tsar suffered for it and his family. So once Putin crossed them, I don't think Putin's of any lack of intelligence. I think he knows exactly what the situation is that given the chance, that they will take revenge for him stepping in at Syria and other things as well, like Sir.
Well, Pete, a lot of the time people would say, well, Putin is far too friendly with the Jews. We see pictures of him with these Jewish sects. But
that may well be, but that doesn't alter the fact that they want his head.
Well, part of Russia, part of the Russian Union, is Birobidzhan, which is the Jewish oblast. It's a Jewish state that they already have as part of the Soviet Union. So if he's going to be representing all these oblasts and parts of the former Soviet Union that expect Russia to represent them, they're expecting Putin to represent them, these Jews are, that are in Birobidzhan. And we don't hear of them causing very much trouble. They're definitely not causing as much trouble as the Jews in Israel are. So
yeah, well, same in Iran. I mean, they have Jews in Iran, and they're all well looked after, and they're all quite happy.
I think they've actually got the largest Jewish population outside of Israel and New York in Iran.
They have.
I think I remember reading at some point. But I think one of the things was
that Goldman Sachs, there's an office there where, you know, is actually Satan's office.
Well, the other thing with the Iranians is that their bank, although they claim not to have usury, it's a different system. They do put charges on there, but it's not the same banking system that we have in the West. No. The Iranian central bank is different to the central banks of the West. And I think one of the reasons why they're now working with Iran is because they really didn't like Ahmadinejad because of what he said about the Holocaust.
But he didn't say that, did he? The words were twisted again, you know, and used to the max. It's propaganda just the same as it was against Germany and just the same as we see against Putin today. You know, they twist these things, repeat it so many times, control the media, everybody believes it.
Well, he didn't say he was going to push Israel into the sea. He was talking about the state, the Zionist state. I can't recall the exact words that he said about the Holocaust, but I think what he was getting at was, why should the Palestinians be paying for what they consider Germans did to them? Why should the Palestinians pay for it?
But and they are suffering.
This is the reason why the Jews hate them so much. But it's definitely going to be interesting to see, after all this hate the Iranian stuff that we've had on the television, how they're going to portray them in the media now.
Can you remember when them troops, a ship ventured into their waters a while back now, I think Bush was in then, the UK, the Royal Navy, drifted into Iranian waters, they were arrested and they were held for a week or so, and then they suddenly let them go and they came back to England, praised how well they've been looked after, but then suddenly shuffled away from the TV cameras. We didn't see them for 24 hours. And then after 24 hours, they came out and gave a completely different story, saying, that they were mistreated and they weren't looked after, fed right or anything, which was completely opposite to what they were saying before they were whisked away.
I don't remember that, but I can easily believe it. They must have debriefed them and told them what they had to say, rather than actually telling the truth about it.
That's right.
It's going to be it's interesting to see everything that is happening. It's so bizarre that you know, we're looking at Russia as now holding up traditions, whereas 70 years ago it was Russia that was the Soviet Union that was attacking. And it's the same, and it's in the other way around now. We've got the UN with these NGOs, these non-governmental organizations, which they've put all around the world. They use them to start you know, the riots and the uprising against Bashar al-Assad. Yeah. They've got them in Russia, and Putin has made a law saying that they're agents of a foreign power. And this is the same technique that the communists were using in Germany. They set up these various groups, various communist groups that were supposedly for the rights of the workers or what have you, but they were actually all working for the Soviets. And the plan was to bring the Red Army in and put the Soviets in charge.
It amuses me because Putin was in the KGB, so I'm quite sure he knows all their moves. You know, I don't think they're going to come up with anything new that he doesn't know about, because being, you know, a member of the KGB, he would have been quite aware of tactics of how to subvert a country, I would imagine.
Well, yeah, well, this is just it. He's been in the KGB, so he knows how all of this works. He knows what goes on behind the scenes. You would think that he would be an excellent man for the job, you know, to be honest. Mm. Because the KGB has fallen apart, but he was trained in all of that. He's trained in espionage, so, you know, he's going to be aware of it all and what they're really doing and what they're really meaning.
Well, the problem is that in the Ukraine, we might have touched on this last week, the problem is, because the war is only 70 years ago, there's still a lot of pain down that end, especially when the Balkans war was going on with Serbia and Croatia and all them places. You know, there's a lot of shall we say, revenge being sought for what went on in World War II. Certainly down in the Ukraine, there's been what you would class as neo-Nazis fighting against the Russians, because in their eyes, the only good Russian is a dead Russian, especially with what the Russians did when they invaded places like Germany and raped all the women. People had to commit suicide, and even the general populace was committing suicide, not just the, you know, Hitler and Goebbels. So this hatred does carry on. And so even though Russia is not the communist state it was then, they are still Russians to these people, and the, you know, the hatred has been burning for so long that it doesn't really matter what political stance they take to these people. They want revenge, and if they see a Russian, they'll kill them. But that does confuse things, because then you get somebody like Soros thinking, oh, well, we can back these to go into Ukraine and fight the Russians, and these Jews will pay these people money, because they'll pay anybody money who can get a job done, like they did with ISIS. So that confuses the issue. But generally speaking, I've got to believe that Russia is the last bastion for the white people and for religion and the way of life that me and you would like to see. If you get me, Sven.
Yeah, I do. One of the confusing bits is because Putin has this anti-Nazi thing, and he has this company, this anti-Nazi, anti-fascist group, World yeah. Without Nazism, or something like that. I forget what it's called, and they do fund this anti-fascism group, which is run by Jews. But I think partly that is because there's this big myth of Russia fighting this war against these evil Nazis that did this to them.
Yeah.
And they don't look at them as Germans. They look at them as Nazis. And then they portray this idea that it's neo-Nazis in the Ukraine as being the enemy, because Nazis, it seemed to be, you know, that's what who they have portrayed as the enemy to them, even though the actual policies of National Socialism, some of them, like promoting traditional values and being against homosexuality, they promote themselves, and well, also anti-abortion and other things.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's always good to see one of Pussy Rat getting slapped there as well.
Yeah, well, that sort of thing. Again, it goes back to, you know, it's the deeds rather than the name.
Yeah.
No, it's the same as we were talking about earlier with Hitler being a Christian, but by his deeds, by what he did, and you can see, even though Putin comes out with all this anti-Nazi rhetoric, yet by his actions, you know, he's probably a lot better than any of the Western politicians. He's prevented this promotion of homosexuality. He promotes tradition. You know, look at the way that he slapped down Pussy Riot. That's like these NGOs that are funded. They're just, you know, they're funded to subvert the nation. Yep. And that's what that group was about. And that's what Femen are about as well. It's all about subverting the nations that they've been put inside. And then it all gets promoted in our Western press as being edgy and anarchistic and liberal values and equality for everyone. It's just about breaking down, you know, the will of another country.
When I see Cameron and Obama having a go at Putin, you know, that's a good thing. It's a little bit like the Labour Party at the moment, how they're all having a go at this at Corbett. Apparently, Paddy Power, the bookies, have stopped paying out now. Are paying out now. Stopped taking bets and are paying out because he's red hot favourite to be the leader of the Labour Party. And certain people like Blair and the other hierarchy of what was really the second Tory party are not quite happy about Corbyn winning it and using all the scare tactics and everything they can to prevent Corbett from winning. They've even alleged that Conservatives or Tories have infiltrated the party and they're voting just to put Corbett in because then Labour will collapse. But the point being is that, and also still the day, that Corbett is no friend of the Jews. And Corbett has attended many of the Palestinian rallies and you know, the pro-Palestinian rallies. And so that's another reason why they don't particularly want him in, because like Hitler used some of these, what's good for the population, Hitler used some of these ideas as well. He took a bit of a good from this, bit of a good from this area. And I think Corbett, you know, is sending out the message, we've had enough of this, these corporates, you know, that we need a fairer country. And these are all music, you know, to people's ears who have struggled for years. So I'm not surprised that the Labour hierarchy and Sky and BBC and everybody else is starting to kind of try to get a train going against Corbett. But at the moment, like I said, Paddy Power paying out on the bets.
Well, I think one of the interesting things to see with the Labour Party here, where they're saying, oh, this is terrible, we can't have this, we're having people joining the Labour Party just to subvert the democratic vote. And that's exactly what they did to the country. And they even admitted that's what they were doing. They said, we're going to import all these people and rub the right's nose in it so that they'll never be able to get voted in again. And yet when it's done to them and people say, well, we're going to join the Labour Party just so that we can subvert the vote, they're suddenly against it. I think we've got Brett's called up again, and I think we might try something else. Yeah, the problem might be sorted now. Let's just see if I unmute him. Brett, are you there?
Hello? Yes, I'm here. I finally managed to shut off that radio. I know what it was.
Fantastic. We've got a couple of minutes left. So what was it you were wanting to say?
Yeah, I know. I know I didn't leave long, did I? Basically what I would like to say is that absolutely fantastic show. It's been great hearing you, Sven and Dennis, talking about how Adolf Hitler was Christian, and that is a fact. And it's basically been brilliant. I wish my microphone didn't bugger up on me the whole time.
You're sounding fine now, and nobody's saying that they can't hear you in the chat room. So we've finally got that sorted now. So at least that's good to work out finally at the end of the episode. Thanks for the compliments. And we're sort of coming up to the end now. We've got the last minute left, so just remind people that they can find Dennis's work at Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told .tv and Communism by the Back Door
and Dennis Wise at YouTube,
and of course Truth Will Out, and that's where we get the name for the radio program from, Truth Will Out Radio. So I will say thank you very much for listening, and please do tune in again next time for some more Truthful Out Radio.
Stormer on the Daily Stormer.